Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio B, and my first guest is Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen. The council had a busy night last night. They passed the city budget, and he joins me here in studio. You can join us as well. Our number here at midday, 410-662-8780, or email midday at WIPR.org. Mr. Council President, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
So your take on the budget negotiations. The city council a few years ago got the power to adjust, to make amendments, to make changes to what the mayor proposes. That wasn't always the case. That power hasn't always been exercised in the last couple of years. But this year, you made some substantial changes. Outline what some of those are.
Yeah, we did. And I just want to say I am really proud of how our council stood together. Budget negotiations are tough, but I got to give a ton of credit to Chair Danielle McRae and my colleagues, because at the end of the day, I think this was a really strong budget that reflected not only the city council's priorities, but really the city's priorities as well. And so some of the things that I would lift up, we know that, you know, when it comes to the violent crime fight, Baltimore is showing some really strong progress. And so getting $400,000 more for State's Attorney Bates's body cam review unit, I felt was extremely important. Now, there was a deal that Councilmember Ramos facilitated where 112 of that ended up going to the Inspector General, to Isabel Cumming, who, again, is doing an extraordinary job eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse. And the council felt it was really important to fund her office. I would have taken it from somewhere else in a different agency, but that's okay. But safety, accountability, we did make a major reallocation to support our immigrant community. You know, we know that this is a very challenging time. I did a graduation.
And that's one of those instances in which you really change the mayor's number. I mean, mayor was under $1 million. I think it was $966,000. And you bumped it up to $2 million.
Yeah, we did $2 million. You know, look, Tom, I was at a graduation last week at Graceland Park, and half the parents weren't there. And I asked the principal, why is no one here? And she said, well, the weekend before this, there was a raid over by Pie Time, and one of the parents got snatched up, and we don't know where he is, and it has just created terror within this community. And it got me nostalgic back to a horrible incident over in my former district where at my kid's school, before my kids were there, there was a parent that got snatched up out of Hampstead Hill right outside of the school at 9 a.m. in the morning. And so we know that our immigrant community is experiencing an absolutely existential amount of terror. We in Baltimore follow all of the federal laws, and we are a welcoming city, and we want to continue to thrive in large part because of our immigrant community. So we did think from a budget equals values perspective that supporting the Office of Immigrant Affairs was really important for this council.
For the $2 million that they're going to have allocated, what kind of work do they do? Because they actually don't, that particular office doesn't provide direct services. What do they do?
Correct. Yeah. So they work with a number of groups. Some of it is around social services, making sure there are social workers, there are folks available. If a family member gets removed, that we are able to support that family nonetheless. And then we also work, we support a legal defense fund. What could be more American than the right to an attorney? And yet in deportation cases, folks often do not get an attorney. And so we want to make sure that everything is legal, everything is constitutional. Those are some of the things. Again, depending on how bad it gets over the next couple of years, we may be looking at issues around food insecurity and hunger. We want to make sure our young people still get to school on time and that they're able, even if their parents couldn't show up at this graduation, that our children feel safe enough to attend school, which is pretty shameful if you think about where we are as a country and as a city. But those are some of the things we also...
Yeah, and the other complicating factor here is that the information coming from the White House changes sometimes by the hour. Just a couple of days ago, President Trump appeared to have an epiphany about the fact that so many people who are here without legal status are working in the hotel industry, which he's very involved in. They're working in the food service industry, which he's also involved in. And they're working in agriculture. And they've, you know, people from those industries have petitioned the president to say, hey, look, you're doing these raids at farms and hotels and restaurants. It's wrecking our business. So he seemed to back off. I mean, there was a email that came from the director of ICE saying we're going to stop raids at those kinds of businesses because they are so crucial to our economy. And literally a few hours later, that email was rescinded. Nope, that's not the case. We're going to go ahead because you've got the Stephen Millers of the world, the special counsel of the president, saying we need to have, you know, deport 3,000 people a day. It's very difficult to plan, even in a budgetary sense.
Tom, I mean, it is complete chaos. The challenge for the mayor, for myself, is we remain committed to following all federal laws. We are crystal clear that the city of Baltimore will follow the laws, and we also want to welcome all of our neighbors. We want to make sure folks are here, living their lives, not committing any crimes. But the reality for Baltimore is that our immigrant population is a blessing, that a lot of the growth that we've seen is in part due to our immigrant population. And, for the last 8 years before I became council president, I represented a district that is thriving in no small part because of folks, whether it was Little Italy, Greektown, or now folks from Central America who have come to this country to make a life, to go to church, to go to school, to start a business, to buy a home. They are so much part of the American fabric. And so I think for Mayor Scott, for myself, for my 14 colleagues, we refuse to turn our back on our immigrant neighbors. And I'll just also say on a very personal note, I am the grandson of refugees. This country welcomed my grandparents. It was not an easy thing. They left, escaped from Austria and Germany. They escaped from gas chambers. About half my family died in the Holocaust. But and frankly, like America, even at that time, had a lot of ambivalence, as you know, Tom, about welcoming Jews into the country. It was not an easy thing, but that happened. And so I am now, two generations later, the president of a major American city, the city council, because of our welcoming aspect as a country. And so there is no moment in which this city council under my leadership or Mayor Scott's leadership are going to turn our backs on our immigrant population. And you're right, it is absolute chaos dealing with the Trump administration right now.
Councilman or City Council President Zeke Cohen is my guest. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wipr.org. And of course, you know, to put a bow on this, it's up to Congress to take the laws that we have, which are a mess, and the immigration system that we have, which is a mess, which everybody agrees, the right, the left, everybody agrees the system is deeply flawed. But, you know, Mr. Trump got elected on throw everybody out. That still has substantial support. We've got to, you know, recognize that, you know, half the country thinks this is a good idea. So, you know, the politics of this certainly will continue. We have an email from Suzanne who says, I'd appreciate it if you could ask the council president whether the budget includes funding that would make it possible to reinstitute the Civilian Review Board for the Baltimore City Police Department. It's crucial to bring back the Civilian Review Board since there's great need for a broad, or a board rather, with independent investigative authority and subpoena powers. I just had Ray Kelly on the show last week talking about this very issue, you know, accountability in the police department.
Yeah, it's critically important. And I know Ray and other folks have been advocating for years to, one, bring us local control of the police department, which we were successful. We now have full local control. And two, to really establish a system that is able to both support the effective, strong policing that we've seen under the leadership of Rich Worley, but also that roots out the folks that are not good officers, we need to make it crystal clear that if you violate the law, if you violate people's constitutional rights, that we do not want you as part of the police department. And I know you and Ray had talked about the ACC and the establishment of this accountability board. I think where there's still some tension is its level of independence. What I've heard from some of the folks in the advocacy community is that they want to make sure that the board that is adjudicating any kind of police misconduct cases is not beholden to the city, is not beholden to any one administration. And so I think there is still some work to be done in that space. What I will tell you is that Mark Conway, who's my chair of the Public Safety Committee, and I are going to be holding a hearing to really try to work through some of the issues around police accountability and this unique moment that we're in, Tom. I mean, you heard all the talk. We didn't have local control until before the Civil War. And so this is a new thing for Baltimore. This is a new power that we've been granted. And this city council wants to execute it, just like we did, to your previous point, with being able to make cuts and move money around in the budget. I want my city council, I want my colleagues to feel empowered to actually lean in when it comes to our police department and both support the great work that is happening and the improvements that are being made, and also to push in the areas where there's still a lot more work to go.
Let's go to the phones. We have a caller, Richard, on the line from Baltimore. Richard, welcome to the program with Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to just ask two questions and then I can wait off air. One is, when you just dish out money and attach plaudits to the special, the AG office or the IG's office, have you ever raised any significant questions as to whether or not she subscribes to the national ethics of the AG panel of America, and why not? What governs her broad-based authority? How many women and minority businesses has she put out of business as opposed to the general populace of business that do business with the city, black versus white? And what are the constraints? And how do you just say the mayor's wrong, we want to do this, without knowing the facts? And if you do know the facts, I want to hear them.
Okay, thank you for that perspective, Richard. I appreciate it. So accountability in the office of the inspector general. Isabel Cumming has suggested that the city saved $1.7 million last year following her investigations into fraud and waste in city government. When it comes to private companies, she does do investigations that involve private companies and their dealings with the city. She wants to use this extra money that she was able to get for specific people devoted specifically to the Department of Public Works and the Department of Transportation. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, so just a couple things in that call. So just so we're all on the same page, the Inspector General, Baltimore is somewhat unique in that we have an independent Inspector General, and that was legislation that I think Councilmember Dorsey originally passed. But the idea is that she is not beholden to either the mayor or me. She actually has a board which gets appointed, and that is the board that holds her accountable. I think that Isabel Cumming has done an extraordinary job both around waste, fraud, and abuse within agencies, saving money. She's a very effective communicator. And what I would also say is that I do give her a lot of credit for some of the work recently in acknowledging the real harms going on at DPW, right? A lot of her investigations before the death of Mr. Silver were putting a bright light on an issue that has too long been ignored, which is the safety and the health of our working women and men. And so I do think there is a need to continue that work. I did support giving her additional investigators because I can tell you that the Department of Public Works is making true progress under Khalil Zaid. I think he's doing an extraordinary job coming into that agency. However, I do think there is still a very, very long way to go. And I am not satisfied by the safety conditions or, frankly, even the health and heat standard conditions that our workers are facing. This city council did a ride along, worked a whole shift with our sanitation workers, my colleagues and I. It was extremely hard. You're up early in the morning. It's backbreaking, difficult work. I can see why so many people get hurt. And so to have an inspector general that has been deep in those weeds, trying to both identify improvements to safety and then also culture, I think has actually been extremely good for that agency. And I look forward to seeing the same with the OT.
What about the caller's concern with racial equity in her investigations, racial equity in her office, racial equity in about the people she investigates? Do you have any concerns about that? Because the caller appeared to have some.
Look, I think it's really important that her board be constantly evaluating whether all areas of effectiveness, including around racial equity. I haven't heard that concern personally. To me, again, I think she has done a pretty extraordinary job, but I understand any time you have an inspector general, there is going to be tension. There is going to be stuff that gets revealed that is uncomfortable to a lot of people. And so I do think that's something really important for the board that oversees her office to pay close attention to.
Do these new positions represent a departure from her normal modus operandi, which is to say that she only investigates things? We have her on, you know, with some regularity. It's been a while. We need to have her on again soon. She investigates things based on complaints that she receives.
That's right.
So if you dedicate somebody who's only going to look into what's happening at the Department of Public Works and only going to look into the Department of Transportation, are these people going to start their own investigations, go out and investigate, or are they simply going to respond to complaints and tips that they get from people regarding those two agencies? Do you know?
Look, I think that is a conversation for her. My understanding is that these are folks who are going to respond to those types of complaints within those agencies. What I will also say is that I think her investigation into the health and safety conditions at DPW is continuing. And I think she felt like she needed some additional capacity in that area. And again, I just have to be clear that for agencies that are highly functional, that are doing a lot with a little, I think it's incumbent on us from an outcomes perspective to support their work. And I've found her office to be highly effective.
I want to ask you about the Board of Estimates, which is meeting tomorrow. And you're going to vote on a no-bid contract that had been deferred from a few weeks ago. This was a contract having to do with utility locating and marking services. And this company now is going to charge something like 50% more than when the contract was originally put in front of the board. You were going to think about it. A couple of weeks ago, you decided to defer it and hold off and learn some more. I had Bill Henry, the comptroller, on the other day, and he said he had not at that point been briefed about the circumstances and the situation. Can you shed any light? Because this is, again, a contract that wasn't bid, which is a whole lot more money now than it was originally.
Let me make a general comment about procurement on the Board of Estimates before addressing that specific issue, which is that what I've identified is that our system, I think, is very flawed right now, which is lowest bid. What I've seen frequently is that sometimes the bidders who come in the lowest are not equipped to do the best work, are not fulfilling all labor standards, maybe doing harm to their own workforce. And what often happens, Tom, is that they'll come in at a low bid and then they won't finish the work. And so there will be a change order midstream where all of a sudden it goes from being low bid to it's not such a low bid because ultimately we're paying 2x or 3x what they originally set it at. And there's not enough of a check to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and this happens all the time. Mark Reuter at the Baltimore Brew for years.
Yeah, it's been all
has,
over it.
Has all over it.
And I think there, but I think there's something really important there, which is that I do think that we as a city need to move toward best value procurement, really being more strategic and thoughtful overall about these types of contracts that you're bringing up. Is that the best use of our precious taxpayer dollars? One of the things that we bang the drum on throughout these budget hearings is we want to move Baltimore to best fiscal practices. It is really important to me that every single taxpayer dollar is well spent. And so one thing that we said repeatedly and that we got a commitment from the city administrator to work on is in the budgeting process, there's this really unfortunate system where agencies will overspend their budget and then use vacant pins, vacant positions that have been vacant for a very long time, 18 months or more, to cover overtime expenses. And it's essentially a piggy bank that never ends. What ends up happening is that they have to run it back to the city council to do what are called supplemental budgets after they've already spent that money. And so my concern in the,
yeah, and at that point, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do.
Yeah, the train has left the station. The toothpaste is out of the tube. So two things that your question illuminates is, one, improving our fiscal practices when it comes to the city's budgeting process and not allowing agencies to go over their budget. Just tell me what the real number is. Factor in the overtime. Let's eliminate some of these long-term vacant positions. That's number one.
And does the fiscal 26 budget reflect that?
Not yet. No. I think we have started. We have begun this conversation. We had a very challenging but important conversation in the Committee of the Whole, which I chaired, about this practice. But what it does reflect is an attempt to begin to rein in some of the overspending, some of the overtime. And what it also does is secure the commitment that this is an issue we are going to work on together over the next year so that we can come back and just have more truth in budgeting. That's all I'm looking for, is truth and transparency. When the budget gets signed, when the deal gets cooked, that everybody knows that's it. You can't just come back for more and more and more.
Well, we're out of time, but let me have you comment briefly on the revenue side of the budget. There are fines and fees that will increase. The income tax rate stays the same. The property tax rate stays the same. It's not lowered.
Right.
You had originally, you know, expressed some pretty serious concerns about the fines and fees and what that'll mean for local people.
Yeah, look, I'll say this. I was disappointed that in the end we are keeping most of the fines and fees, but budgets are about compromise. And the reality is we are facing some very tough fiscal headwinds, both from Annapolis and from Washington. And so I think the Scott administration, my friend and partner, Brandon Scott, felt very, very, very strongly that we need to update our fee and fine schedule and make sure folks are paying a fair amount when it comes to Ubers and a tipping fee for haulers and all these other things. Again, I felt it was a difficult moment to do it, given the financial pressure that many Baltimoreans are feeling. But in the end, that was part of our compromise. And I just want to say that I am really proud of both the city council and the administration, because I think Baltimore is showing that democracy still works and we can still argue, disagree, but at the end of the day, come back together and get a budget that works for everybody.
That's Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen. Mr. Council President, we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Tom, good to see you, man. Appreciate it.
And up next, a new biography of Claire McCardle, a fashion designer from Frederick who had an international career. The author, Elizabeth Evetts Dickinson, joins me on the other side of a quick break. But before we go to that break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of people who've lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do this to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 61 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified 3 of the 4 people who were killed last week. They are Daryl Conway, age 33, Adam Brown, age 47, and LeVar Steeles. He was 23 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.